Today is February 3rd, 2006, and this is the TMO2Go Weekly Roundup, a Mac Observer podcast. I'm Ricky Spiro. To get the full story on anything we cover in this podcast, you can visit macobserver.com/roundup. Welcome, everybody. This week, we send three stories through the new TMO context machine. Do the stories really matter? Well, before we can answer that, we need to know the news. So first, facts. Research firm Strategy Analytics on Tuesday issued a new report in which it saw trouble brewing for iTunes in the form of Verizon's new wireless VCast music service. The company estimated that global shipments of music-compatible cell phones will skyrocket to 1 billion by the year 2010, while portable music players will see a modest increase to around 100 million. Yes, a measly 100 million. But of course, the sales of all kinds of consumer electronics, from iPods to cameras, have long been dwarfed by those of cell phones. Strategy Analytics also projected that by 2010, $8.2 billion US worth of music will be delivered digitally on an annual basis, accounting for almost 30% of the total music sales in Western Europe and in North America. Rumors, fueled by comments from a Bear Stearns analyst, circled this week that Google may be considering an extensive alliance with, or even an acquisition of, Napster in an effort to take on the iTunes Music Store. Google already has a music search service that lists related music and album art when you search for a musical group. Despite the speculation, Google downplayed the Napster reports. A Google spokesperson told The Times Online, "No, we have no plans at this time to develop a music store or to compete with existing online and offline music retailers." On news of the Google rumors, Napster's stock shot up to nearly $5 after spending the past month rolling around in the low $3 range. This week, Adobe detailed its roadmap for updating its applications to run natively on Intel-based Macs. Universal binary versions of Adobe software will be released as part of Adobe's regular 18 to 24-month product cycle. Since Creative Suite 2 was released in April of 2005, that means that October 2006 is the earliest we can expect to see upgrades for the company's mainstay applications. Adobe stated that it is committed to supporting Intel-based Macs. Based on tests in January, Adobe feels that its applications are Rosetta compatible, which means they will run in Apple's PowerPC emulation environment on Intel-based Macs. Performance, however, is an issue. The one exception to Rosetta compatibility is Version Q Workspace for servers. So which of these stories really matter? Joining me now to power up the context machine and answer that question, TMO staff writer Jeff Gamet. Jeff, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me on.
Let's begin with this story about Verizon's VCast music service. There are some really big differences between VCast and the iTunes Music Store. How much of a direct competitor is VCast, really, to iTunes?
Well, I think today, a lot of people look at VCast as a very direct competitor, but ultimately it's not. The type of market that iTunes goes for is not at all the same thing that VCast goes for. With VCast, ultimately what they're looking for are the people that are going to be out and about running around town and want to download something immediately to their cell phone. And the people that are going to be using iTunes sit at their computer, go to the iTunes Music Store, find the content they want, and then download it and take it with them. So, in a sense, ultimately, I think they could be complementary services.
Yeah, it actually reminds me a lot in some ways of the relationship between, and this is a very general analogy, but the relationship between the iTunes Music Store for downloading TV and an actual TV. The sense that the iTunes thing is more of an impulse buy. You say, well, I really want to be able to watch this now. I want to be able to take it on the road with me. But you can do, you know, Comcast, you can do on-demand stuff, or you can sit down and watch the show. It seems like a lot of this is about usage.
Oh, sure. I agree with that completely. And what it comes down to is each user and how they want to use the content.
So another part of this is about, in addition to the usage, there's also the question of subscription versus buying. We hear, you know, Steve Jobs talks about people want to buy their music, which naturally he would say because that's what Apple's doing. And the Napster CEO says, well, people want to have access to the whole library of music. How much of that is at issue when we look at iTunes versus VCast?
Well, I think that the subscription service is probably a better way to go for VCast, simply because of the nature of the content that they provide. As an example, if I go to the iTunes Music Store and buy a current episode of Battlestar Galactica, it's because I want to watch it, and I want to watch it on my terms. Now, if I had a cell phone that used VCast, well, I'm going to be out and around town. What I want to do is get maybe a movie review or look at the weather forecast or something that's going to be a more transient type of information. So a subscription service totally makes sense for that. In essence, that's how cable television works. You're subscribing to transient content.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense to me, the idea that the buyer's model, the ownership model, makes a lot more sense for someone sitting at home building their music library, whereas the subscription model makes a lot more sense for someone who's on the go and just wants to be able to listen to a song once or any random song at any given time while they're sitting on the bus.
Sure, but even more than the music part, for a service like VCast, I look at the immediately available information content that they provide. So you can get up-to-date news stories and the weather forecasts, the traffic reports, which is something that you can't do through iTunes.
So now let's talk a little bit about another subscription service. Last week we talked about how Napster was laying off workers, and now the company is not dead by any stretch, but they clearly aren't doing as well as they might have hoped that they were going to do. How big of a deal would it be if Napster did fail?
If Napster failed, from a nostalgic standpoint, it would be a sad thing, because that company really did pioneer a lot with the internet-based music download services. Of course, initially it was on the illegal side, but the point is they were a pioneer. And so it would be sad to see them go. In the long run, it probably wouldn't matter, because there's plenty of other companies that are waiting in line, ready to hop into the void that Napster would leave.
And that void is the subscription model for computers.
Exactly.
All right, and so this week there was also some talk that Google might purchase Napster. Would that kind of an acquisition make any sense for Google?
I think the whole rumor about Google buying Napster is actually really interesting and kind of compelling. I think Napster would be an interesting purchase for Google, because it would give them the tools they need to start their own music or video subscription service. And it would also give them the advantage of being able to buy a pre-built system instead of having to make their own. I look at it like buying a used car. You can buy the car, it's still perfectly good, but it doesn't cost you nearly as much as it did for the guy that had to buy it and drive it off the lot.
So in that sense, they could do it, and it would be a kind of turnkey, for lack of a better word, purchase for them. They'd say, well, now we can do subscription music. Does that fit into Google's position in the marketplace at all?
I think Google's position in the marketplace, at least from Google's perspective, is that they will be the marketplace. So from that standpoint, sure. As far as where the company is right now, not exactly, because they're more of an aggregate service, in essence. They're not creating the content and providing it directly. They're merely cataloging content so people can go find it, which is a very valuable tool. I think that with Napster in the mix for them, hypothetically, that would branch them out beyond what their core system really is. And I don't know. It might work. It might not.
So Google itself is currently denying that it wants to open a music store, get into the music business, and specifically that it wants to purchase Napster. But do you see that kind of a statement, let's take it at face value, whatever they said, let's assume for the moment that they mean it. There was nothing in the statement that we carried earlier this week that excludes the possibility that they're cooking up some way to work with Napster or to work with a subscription music service. Is it possible that they might have an interest in creating some relationship that lets them do some of the other stuff that they already do, like, for example, sell ads?
Sure. They're Google. They can do whatever they want. I think that when they made the statement that they're not actually interested in purchasing Napster, I think they really meant that. But I also think that they're smart enough not to lay all their cards on the table. And I think it is pretty likely that even if they're not dealing with Napster, they're probably talking with someone else that can provide them the tools so that they can give you other content.
Fair enough. And finally, let's talk a little bit about Adobe's product release cycle. We talked about the fact that it might be a while until some of the Universal or the Intel native versions of Adobe's mainstay products will be available. Is this, would you consider this bad press for either Adobe or for Apple?
Yes, I consider it bad press for both companies. But I consider it bad press because that's how most of the media outlets are going to present it, and that's how most of the viewers, readers, listeners are going to perceive it as well. No, I don't think it's actually as big of a deal as a lot of people are making it out to be. There's a couple things that have happened that have put us in this awkward position right now. One is Apple started releasing Intel-based Macs about 6 months ahead of what they had originally said they would do, which is great because now consumers can buy a more powerful iMac than they could in December. The other side of it is that Adobe has a very regular product release cycle, and they stick to that for good reason, because if they veer off of that roadmap they've created for themselves, it'll throw their entire product development cycle way behind schedule. So right now we're looking at October, possibly, for new Adobe apps to come out that are universal binary, so they can run on Intel and PowerPC Max. But then again, it might be next April before we see something, which falls completely in line with Adobe's roadmap. When they did the transition from the prior versions of their applications, from the OS 9 to OS 10 versions, we had the exact same problem, which is we had this big lag time from when Apple released computers to when Adobe released software that ran natively on them. I don't think it'll be as big a deal around this time because Rosetta is working pretty well, although there are a lot of people that are saying they're seeing about half the performance speed they expect. But for a lot of other people that have been waiting to upgrade, even if it's slower than it ought to be, it's still faster than what they've had before.
I suppose, first of all, that it's worth pointing out that the people who live and breathe Photoshop or any of the other major Adobe applications are not going to be purchasing an iMac right now. They're waiting to buy the new version of the Power Mac, right, when that comes out later sometime this year.
For the most part. But I do know a lot of designers that love the iMac, and they're quite happy with the performance they get out of it as a design machine. So I'm sure that there's already some designers out there that have already gone out and purchased their beautiful new Intel iMac so they can start running all these applications. My guess is that they're probably upgrading from a G4 computer, so going to the Intel computer will still be a speed boost for them.
And so the people who, for example, bought computers last year and are working on G5 Power Macs probably weren't looking to upgrade anyway, and the people who were a ways back might be just as happy to see a speed boost at this point.
Exactly. And the people that are running their G5 Macs right now, I don't think they should invest in a brand new Intel Mac. I think they need to wait until, unless they're doing something that really requires the new computer, I think they should wait until Adobe rolls out their new applications that are universal binary, and when they buy their new Mac, they're going to have this massive speed boost, and it'll be great for them. So, and actually, Adobe is recommending people not upgrade to the Intel Macs until the CS3 package is available, which I thought was kind of interesting.
And that's going to have to be the last word. Thank you so much for joining us, Jeff.
Thank you very much.
Now for a roundup of the week's odds and ends. A patent application from Apple Computer offers yet more evidence that the company is developing technologies for a tablet computer. The full story is at macobserver.com/roundup, and if you'll permit me to pander for a moment, let me just say, stay subscribed. In a future show, we'll send a pile of these patent applications through the context machine and see what it tells us about the direction Apple is heading. The Intellectual Property Action Committee has announced a plan to get a 30-gigabyte video iPod engraved with the words "Listen to the People" and preloaded with public domain content into the hands of each member of Congress. The idea is to help educate congressmen about digital media. The Swiss government plans to put a new tax into effect March 1st. It will be assessed on the sales of flash and hard drive-based MP3 players, as well as audio-video recorders with hard drives. Apple and other MP3 player manufacturers have asked the Swiss federal court to postpone the tax so that they can contest it. Local TV network affiliates want to be able to sell podcast versions of their programs, and WRAL-TV in Raleigh, North Carolina, is waiting on approval to do so. The network is a CBS TV affiliate and is looking to sell shows online, but only within its own broadcast market. Currently, only national networks are selling TV programs through iTunes. If local affiliates get the approval to start reselling network programming, that could have an impact on the iTunes Music Store and other internet-based video download services. CBS is not currently selling shows through iTunes, but we carried a report this week that the network is in the process of formulating its arrangements for digital distribution of its shows. Wall Street is starting to give mixed signals on Apple stock. Bank of America Securities, for example, has lowered its target price for Apple stock from $85 US to $82 based on concerns about lower iPod manufacturing levels. The Bank of America analyst is also concerned about sales for the Macintosh product line, feeling that sales have been slower than anticipated leading up to the release of the Intel-based models. UBS analyst Ben Rietzes thinks that Apple has a very positive long-term outlook, despite current sentiments from other financial analysts. UBS is maintaining its target price of $100 based on pent-up demand for new products, as well as the potential growth in digital content. Apple stock closed this week at $71.85 a share after spending the week bobbing in the low 70s. Finally this week, the product roundup and the diversions. WeebyTech announced the G5 Jam Express on Tuesday. The product adds two more drive bays to the inside of the PowerMac dual-core G5, bumping its internal storage up to a potential 2 terabytes. The G5 Jam Express is available at the WeebyTech website and is priced at $70 US. Singular and Motorola on Tuesday announced the new iTunes-enabled Sliver cell phone, which is now available. The company's decided to adopt a form factor that's sleeker than the iTunes-enabled Rocker, which has not sold well since its launch last year. Like the Rocker, the Sliver can only hold up to 100 songs in its iTunes jukebox, and the music must be transferred from a computer. Singular has yet to offer music downloads over its cellular network, unlike its rivals. The Sliver includes a VGA camera with a 4x zoom, as well as the ability to shoot video clips. Both the Sliver and the Rocker have an annoying vowel deficiency in their names. The new phone costs $200 with a 2-year contract. Nova Media on Tuesday made available its free iSync plugins. The plugins enhance iSync by expanding the list of compatible cell phones that can synchronize data with the Mac. They are available for download at the Nova Media website. Searchlight, released Wednesday, is a new application that enables spotlight searches across your network. The software is available for download at the Searchlight website and costs $30. Zara Studios announced Simple Elegant Sales on Friday. The program is a point-of-sales system that handles standard invoice processing, inventory tracking, purchase orders, employee time tracking, and can batch process credit cards daily or weekly. Simply Elegant Sales costs $130 for the entry edition, which is geared toward businesses that already have a credit card processing system in place and don't need to manage employee hours. The complete package costs $250. Earthflix Inc., formerly known as Endorphin.com, has been renewed. The website now features high-definition videos, video features, and is starting an Earthflix exclusive series called California PI. The videos at Earthflix are free to download, and the preview to California PI can be found in the iTunes Music Store. Also, Misha Saglaroplo reviews the SendStation Earbuddy headphone case, as well as Marware's remote docking station. And in the week's diversions, look for Nancy Carol Gravely's column, Computing with Bifocals. She writes about Mac help scenarios. Vern Seward looks into iPod etiquette, and we point you to an interview with Blizzard designer Jeff Kaplan, in which he talks about future content for their game, World of Warcraft. And that's the news. Thanks for listening to the Weekly Roundup. Our content is written by the good people at the Mac Observer. Our bandwidth is provided by Cashfly, and the bass is by Boom for TMO. And don't miss TMO to Go's other podcast, The Mac Geek Gab. Stay subscribed. Until next week, we'll see you online.